Yeah. Oh, there, thank you, Dale. Yes, yeah. So I jumped off a cliff with my daughter. The thing is, I shared this a little bit with a few of you, and because of this thing called Facebook, people are like, hey, that's really cool. You should share that with the congregation to get a little more credibility. So here you go. But you know, I did this with my daughter, who likes to remind me that you're never too old to do anything, which includes that. Also, building Lego sets, which my kids gave me for my birthday, for my 50th birthday. So there you go. It's in my office if you want to see it. Anyway, back to jumping off the cliff. Again, someone said I should show this picture to you, so I did. And I hope I get some credibility, but I think I should actually get more credibility for preaching a day after doing that and then sleeping on the ground in a tent. Needless to say, when you sang happy birthday to me two weeks ago, I was pretty tired. Physically tired, that is. The thing is actually my heart was full and my soul was at rest. That's because that trip, which included doing things like this, was actually a Sabbath for me. Now, if you're like, hold on a second. Sabbath is about rest, not risking your life, JD. I understand why you might think that, but I also respectfully disagree. And if you'll join me in Psalm 62, which you can find on page 834 in the Bibles under your seats, I'd like to show you why I disagree. Now, I think most, if not all of us, might agree that, you know, Sabbath is a gift from God, and God invites us to rest in Him. But what I would like for us to consider today through the lens of Psalm 62 is the fact that resting in God is a much broader, or maybe I should say a much deeper, perhaps more holistic practice than you might imagine. So hear these words from Psalm 62. Truly, my soul finds rest in God. My salvation comes from Him. Truly, He is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will never be shaken. How long will you assault me? Would all of you throw me down this leaning wall, this tottering fence? Surely they intend to topple me from my lofty place. They take delight in lies. With their mouths they bless, but in their hearts they curse. Yes, my soul, find rest in God. My hope comes from Him. Truly He is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will not be shaken. My salvation and my honor depend on God. He is my mighty rock, my refuge. Trust in Him at all times, you people. Pour out your hearts to Him, for God is our refuge. Surely the low-born are but a breath, the high-born are but a lie. If weighed in a balance, they are nothing. Together they are only a breath. Do not trust in extortion, or put vain hope in stolen goods. Though your riches increase, do not set your heart on them. One thing God has spoken, two things I have heard. Power belongs to you, God, and with you, Lord, is unfailing love. And you reward everyone according to what they have done. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So, did you notice Psalm 62 begins with these beautiful words, right? Truly, my soul finds rest in God. Like, my salvation comes from Him. Truly, He's my rock and my salvation. He's my fortress. I will never be shaken. That's nice, huh? Hey, did you notice how quickly things get not nice? Like verse 3, it just goes right into it. How long will you assault me? Would all of you throw me down this leaning wall, this tottering fence? Surely they intend to topple me from my lofty place. They take delight in lies. With their mouths they bless, but in their hearts they curse. What? You know, Psalm 62 doesn't tell us exactly what's going on here, but it's clear that David, the ancient king of Israel to whom this psalm is attributed, is in trouble. I mean, he says he is surrounded by enemies. He feels like he's about to collapse. That's why he compares himself to a leaning wall or a tottering fence. But David stands firm. Or at least he's trying to stand firm. Did you notice this? That David declares in verse 1, truly my soul finds rest in God, but then he has to tell his soul to do that in verse 5? Yes, my soul, find rest in God. It's almost like David is doing okay, but then he takes his eyes off God, and as soon as he does, he's in trouble. You know, kind of like Peter when he takes his eyes off Jesus on the Sea of Galilee. The good news here, though, is David seems to still steady himself, and he looks back to God. He sees God once again, and that's why in verse 6, he cries out once again, "Truly God is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will never be shaken." Of course, what's interesting is as soon as David sees God clearly again, he seems to see his enemies clearly again. That's why he says this in verse 9. "Surely the lowborn are but a breath, the highborn are but a lie. If weighed in a balance, they are nothing. Together they are only a breath." Now don't get lost in the language about lowborn and highborn. It sounds like something out of Game of Thrones, but what he's eventually saying is, whether his enemies are nobles or nobodies, they can't really do anything to him. They can't actually harm him because their power cannot compare to God's power. And essentially, David realizes his earthly enemies are all bark and no bite. They're like a breath, a vapor. They're here one day and gone the next. That's in contrast to God, who is different. God, who is a rock, who is a fortress, who is firm ground to stand on, to rest in. And that's why David tells himself to look to God, to trust in God alone. Emphasis on alone. There's actually an odd Hebrew word that's used in this passage. It's the Hebrew word yach. It's actually used 5 times in the first 6 verses, and it's actually the first verse in all, our first word in each of those verses, which means it's an important word. That's how Hebrew works. Word order is based on importance. Now, the thing is, this English doesn't really work that way. And more to the point, there actually isn't a great word to translate this Hebrew word. There's no word that gives us the fullness of what this word means. It's like another Hebrew word, the word shalom, that maybe you've heard of. Shalom is the word that so often gets translated as peace in our Bibles, but as many of you may know, the word shalom means a lot more than that. Yes, it means peace, but it means peace with God and peace with the world and all that God has created. It means to be whole or complete, to flourish, to thrive. Well, the word yach doesn't exactly roll off the tongue the way shalom does, but it too is an important word. Now, it's most often translated as truly or surely or indeed, but none of those words do this word justice. Like, the word yach is really about emphasis. It's like a mic drop, which I would demonstrate for you if the tech people didn't come after me. Just boom, mic drop. Emphasis. When Psalm 62 uses that word 5 times in 6 verses, it is making a very emphatic point. We are to trust in God. But not just to trust in God, we're to trust in God alone. Period. Exclamation point. Now, speaking of points, I don't mean to belabor this one. I just want you to understand the magnitude of what David is saying. We're to trust in God alone. Not God in ourselves, not God in other people, not God in anything else, because everything else is unreliable. Now, to be clear, it doesn't mean that we can't trust other people. It doesn't mean that we can't trust each other. It just means that we shouldn't be surprised if and when we disappoint each other. We shouldn't be surprised that we're going to have to forgive each other because we're going to blow it and hurt each other at times. It is important that we have people in our lives that we can trust, but the point is only God is the only one that we can actually trust in. That's because God is the only one who will never let us down. God is the only one who will be faithful in all things and at all times. Period. Like, exclamation point. Mic drop. But that said, Psalm 62 isn't just talking about people disappointing us. It actually has in mind the idea of people harming us, which for David was a literal reality. If you know anything about this ancient king of Israel, you know that David had literal people who were literally trying to kill him. And depending on the season of his life, it may have been different enemies. At times it was the kings of other nations. At times it was Saul, the king of Israel, that God replaced with David. And at times it was members of David's own family. The thing about Psalm 62 is we don't know when this psalm was composed, and so it's hard to know what enemies, what specific enemies David has in mind. But really, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter for our discussion, because whatever enemies we're talking about for David, those are clearly different than our enemies. Like, we don't have people who are literally trying to kill us. And yes, I know that things like violent crime and terrorist attacks and wars are realities, but the chances of those things finding us are pretty slim compared to so many other enemies that we experience in everyday life. And so, you know, I'm not talking about enemies, you know, like people in the other political party, or people on the other side of some theological debate, or some annoying neighbor on the other side of some fence. Those people aren't really our enemies, even if we probably do find ourselves at odds with people like that from time to time. The enemies that I'm talking about, and the enemies that I think Scripture more often than not talks about, are things that war against our souls. Things that tend to rob us of God's shalom in our lives. Which, you know, could be fear or anxiety about crime or terrorism or war, you know, which tends to get stoked up by cable news and social media. Or it could be fear and anxiety about any number of other things. It could be fractured relationship or strained relationships that are based on some political or theological divide or some personality difference or some property line dispute. It could also be loneliness or disease or addiction or busyness, or infertility, or an occupational hazard, or financial stress. There is no shortage of things that work against our well-being. And really, at times, it's a lot of these things that tend to work together against our well-being. You know, like David in Psalm 62, there may be times where we feel like we are surrounded by enemies. Where we feel like the walls are caving in a bit, like we too might collapse, like this crumbling wall. Or collapsing fence. I mean, the fact is, we don't have literal enemies storming the castle, threatening to harm us, but we do have things that actually war against our souls. Now, the good news is, I think most of us are aware of this. It's why most of us seek things to relieve some of the stress, to get away from these things. The bad news is sometimes our escape strategies, our coping mechanisms, can add weight to our already weary souls. Like, one of the hard truths is sometimes our remedies can turn into our enemies. Like, binge watching your favorite show may give you a break from the real world, but it doesn't do anything about the real world, does it? It doesn't solve your problems, it just helps you ignore them for a little while. Or, you know, your phone, these little supercomputers that we carry around with us everywhere, these things can do everything these days. They can also undo everything these days. It's because these things tend to consume our attention or command our attention. You ever been standing in line at the grocery store and just looked around? Or sitting in traffic and looked around, or at some event, like a concert or a game, and looked around and everyone is on their phone? Have you ever, like, gone to your phone, you know, just to kill a few minutes on Facebook or on TikTok, only look up half an hour later and be like, what just happened? The fact is, these little helpful tools that we carry around, I mean, again, they are helpful, they're tools, but they aren't restful tools. And restless thumbs may point to restless hearts. As a matter of fact, restless thumbs may actually cause restless hearts. There is increasing study. You can actually watch the correlation between the advent of the smartphone and the advent of social media and rises in anxiety and all sorts of social disorders. Of course, it isn't just a problem with technology. You know, some of us, we cope and we unwind by shopping. Some of us do it by drinking. Some of us do it by vacationing. right? You know, we work hard all year long, harder than we should, because we keep telling ourselves that when that big vacation comes or that three-day weekend gets here, we'll rest, only to find that that isn't the case. Like, you've ever had to take a vacation after you get back from your vacation? The fact is, it's not that any of these things is necessarily bad, at least not in moderation. It's just that none of these things is good enough for our eternal souls. None of these things actually provide the lasting rest that we're looking for, that we need. And that's because even the gifts of God cannot replace God. As a matter of fact, sometimes the gifts of God can get in the way of God. That is, if we aren't intentional about celebrating and using God's gifts. And what I mean by that is that sometimes the good things that God blesses us with can take the edge off just enough so that we don't actually pay attention to what's really going on in our souls. It's why, like David in Psalm 62, we have to be intentional to pay attention to our souls, to remind our souls to rest in God, to recognize the fact that, you know what, we need more than retail therapy or wind down Wednesday or a three-day weekend or 3 hours on your preferred streaming service. Our souls need rest in God alone. Period. Exclamation point. Of course, we already knew that, right? Like, Psalm 62 drives this point home by sharing this odd word 5 times in just 6 verses. The real question is, how do we do that? Like, how do we actually rest in God? Well, that's a big question. And the fact is the answer may vary a little bit between us. It may also vary within us between seasons. It may be different at different times. But let me just point you to kind of 3 broad general things that we should consider in every season and that I think are probably universally true between us all. 3 things to recognize about resting in God. The first is this. Resting in God is a holistic reality. That is, it involves our whole selves. Our hearts and our minds, our bodies and our souls. You know, my camping / cliff jumping trip was incredibly restful for my heart and for my soul. It's because I got away from my normal everyday grind and I got to spend some significant time with my daughter having some pretty meaningful conversations. But you know what? There's a reason I don't go camping every day. And there's a reason I only jump off a cliff once every 20 years. It was not so restful for my 50-year-old body. Thing is now that I'm back in my own bed and back to my normal schedule, my body's a little bit more at rest. Oh, but precisely because I'm back to my schedule, I'm having to pay more attention to my heart and my soul right now. I imagine the same is true for you. That you got to pay attention to your whole self, all of the above, if you're actually going to rest in God. And again, this may vary from season to season, but the thing is you got to pay attention to your whole self. To pay attention to the cues that your body gives you. To pay attention to the ways that your mind wanders. To pay attention maybe to how you're addressing those very things. What is it, the anxieties that roll through your head? The things that cause you to stay up at night? You pay attention to the whole thing because resting in God is a whole person reality. Now, related to that is a second principle, and that is to recognize the difference between rest and leisure. Rest and leisure are both good things. They are both gifts from God, but rest and leisure are not the same thing. Leisure is the things that we enjoy, you know, our hobbies, which could be things like hiking or thrifting or, you know, binge watching television in this golden age of television. For the record, I like to do all those things. In fact, I love to get lost in a good show. There are plenty of them out there. The thing is I never feel rested after watching a good show, and not just because I'm watching The Bear where everyone is stressed out and yelling at each other. The same thing happens when I watch The Chosen. These shows are very different, But they both make me feel things and think about things, which I think is a good exercise to recognize the struggles in humanity and recognize the way God intervenes with the whole person. But you know what? Watching those shows doesn't really help me rest. Neither does hiking. Or, you know, I get to not only exercise, but to watch, to just see the stunning beauty of God's creation in this area. Neither does thrifting, even though I do like to casually look for treasures. And if you're thinking, you know what, I can't identify with anything you're saying because, you know, binge watching is not your thing, or hiking is not your thing, or you don't enjoy digging through other people's donated trash. But you know what? Whatever your hobby is, it isn't rest. It is a gift from God. It is to be enjoyed. It is to be celebrated, but don't mistake it for the real thing. So what I'm saying is, make sure that you carve out time for both leisure and rest. Third principle is actually related to the second one. And that is to recognize, to perhaps diagnose, where some of the remedies from the hard realities of life actually may be enemies of rest in your life. That is to be honest with yourself about your coping mechanisms or your escape strategies. Where is it that perhaps you are actually robbing yourself of the ability to rest? And it could be things like, you know, again, these little computers that we carry around, which tend to interrupt your day all the time, especially if you're on the younger end of the generational spectrum. You know those notifications? I finally had to turn those things off. But at the same time, too, noticing how often do you turn to your phone, not necessarily as a sense of help, but maybe to fill the void when you're bored or anxious or you're just really uncomfortable with quiet. The same goes with things that are available to us. There's all sorts of content out there, not just streaming shows, but there's music that's accessible all the time. There are podcasts which are actually really remarkable because there's all sorts of things that you can learn about. But you know what? If you fill every waking moment with something, with some noise, your commute, your exercise routine, your daily chores, you tend to not only miss the opportunity for silence, but you may actually make yourself increasingly uncomfortable with silence, which means you might miss opportunities for hearing the small and still and quiet voice, because sometimes God does his most work, his most important work, his most impactful work in those moments of stillness and quiet. That's why we need to be mindful about cultivating not just space for rest and for leisure, but also for stillness, for quiet, for places where God might actually speak. Now, if the stuff that I just said feels a little bit overwhelming, let me share some good news with you, specifically in how this psalm ends. Psalm 62 ends with these words: "One thing God has spoken, two things I have heard. Power belongs to you, God. And with you, Lord, is unfailing love. And you reward everyone according to what they have done." Now, for the record, that looks like three things to me. I think it's just 2 points. And actually, there's just one big takeaway. And that is this: God is powerful enough and gracious enough to provide exactly what we need. And what we need is rest. Well, God will provide it. But you have to seek him. That's because God can't rest for you. Neither can anyone else. But if this is what you want, and you turn your attention to him, God will give you what you need. He will reward you with what you are seeking. But the thing is, you got to bring your whole self. And you got to create space for all sorts of things: rest and leisure and work and scripture and prayer and stillness and quiet. And you got to be honest with yourself about what is it that at times you actually tend to turn to instead of turning to God. And maybe you need to like take charge of something that has charge of you, whatever your technological master is. But again, the good news is God is gracious enough and powerful enough to give us what we need. And so when we give our whole selves to him, our bodies, our minds, our souls, our hearts, our schedules, our rhythms, our fears, anxieties, our struggles, our wounds, our sins. When we actually come to Him with open hands, we find that God actually does give us exactly what we need. Rest. Refuge. Sabbath. Actually, His very presence. The good news, my friends, is that the God who made us and who calls us to Himself actually dwells in us by His Spirit. And He actually works in us. This is why Augustine said, "You have made us for Yourself, O God, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in You." It's why Jesus said, "Come to Me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." God is gracious enough and powerful enough to give you exactly what you need, and that's rest in Him. So come to Him. And may God be pleased to grant you rest, real rest, by the power of His Spirit, through the gift of Jesus.